This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. In Utah today, jury selection continues in the trial of Warren Jeffs. He's the leader of a religious sect that practices polygamy, where one man can have several wives. But he's not being charged with that, at least not directly. Jeffs faces two counts of rape as an accomplice in the arranged marriage of a 14-year-old girl. So while polygamy itself is not on trial here, it's going to be very difficult to keep it out. The beliefs of Warren Jeffs' group and the practice of plural marriage are an essential element of this story. And that's our main focus this hour. What do members of Jeffs' sect believe in? Are there other polygamous groups? How common is this practice? Is it illegal? And does it fall within the protections of the First Amendment right to freedom of religion? If you have questions along these lines, give us a call. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the program, a spy story from the 40-yard line and the ethics of stealing signs. But first, religion and polygamy in America. We begin with Ken Driggs, a defense attorney from Atlanta, Georgia, and an expert on sex, such as the one led by Warren Jeffs. He joins us from Tallahassee today in the studios of member station WFSU. Nice to have you on the program today.
It's very good to be with you.
And let's start with Warren Jeffs. What exactly did he do that led to his arrest?
Warren is the prophet and president and leader of a religious community that identifies itself as the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Among their beliefs are that what they call celestial or plural marriage, I think to most people that would be called polygamy, is an essential element for salvation, the highest level of salvation in heaven. One of the things that differs them from other groups that have a similar belief is that in their community, they believe that the prophet speaking for God is able to determine who the best partners are for people, and marriages are essentially arranged. The prophet determines who an individual woman or man should marry, and sometimes these are people who do not know each other very well, although it's a pretty small community, and I think most people have an inkling of the other's existence. The women in those marriages have been under the age of 18, which gets them into a legal area. And that's kind of at the center of the case he's being prosecuted for.
And that's the center of this case, under the age of 18, which I guess would be statutory rape.
Yes, depending on different state laws and the age of the person involved, yes, it could be statutory rape. In this instance, it involves a bride who is about 10 years younger than her husband. She was a subsequent wife. She wasn't the initial wife, and she was under the age of 18 at the time of the marriage. She did not know and select the husband that she was married to.
Yet polygamy itself, you say, is not illegal?
Not under the current state of the law. I think many people confuse the term bigamy and polygamy. Bigamy is a crime of fraud where you essentially involve the state in a fraud. Your spouse doesn't know that you have another wife. You're not being honest with people. You may take out a marriage license and misrepresent your eligibility to the government authorities that issue the marriage license. That clearly is illegal in virtually every state. Polygamy does not involve the government. It generally involves people going to a religious leader whom they recognize. They don't involve the state in their decisions. And this religious leader solemnizes a marriage. They see it as a marriage. In the eyes of the law, if we still had adultery statutes, it would fall under that heading or fornication. But even those statutes have been invalidated by the Supreme Court.
The case in Texas is central. That was about homosexual sex, but you say it's central to this as well.
It is. The case out of Texas is frequently referred to as the gay sex case because it did involve sexual relations between two gay men. It is flipping through my notes, looking up the name of it. I believe it's Lawrence versus Texas. It came down a couple of years ago, but it had the effect of invalidating the criminal prosecution of these individuals who are engaging in sex acts that might previously have been prosecuted, and that would have been the way to reach them. In the 19th century, that was the way a number of Mormons who practiced polygamy were prosecuted. But we're in a situation now where the court seems to say that adults are free to make up their own minds as to the kinds of relationships they want to enter into. But there is a clear, bright line between people over 18 and people under 18. And the Lawrence decision does not reach people under 18.
What connection, if any, is there between Warren Jeffs groups and other polygamous groups and the big church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is, of course, better known as the Mormon Church?
The Mormons, yes. The LDS Church, of which I'm a member, plural marriage was a central tenet of its belief system in the late 19th century. It goes back to the founder, Joseph Smith. There was enormous pressure, criminal prosecution, seizure of properties, the loss of almost all rights of citizenship applied to Mormons as a consequence of this and other Mormon practices. And in 1890, the president of the Mormon Church issued something Mormons call the Manifesto, which says, okay, we're going to stop this. There were a number of other issues that were changed, and it took literally a couple of generations. But by 1920, it ceased to be an official practice in the church at any level, and the church was actively excommunicating people. Well, that created a body of Mormon traditionalists who objected not only to the dismissal of polygamy, but communal living and a number of other practices. And they began to form a parallel religious community. They regard themselves as Mormons in every way. They regard themselves as really the true Mormons. Mm-hmm. And the big church has sort of fallen away and diluting itself in order to make itself more popular with society as a whole.
Would they say the big church, as you describe it, had sold out?
Yes, they basically do say that repeatedly. And as the big church goes through a series of changes that bring it closer to mainstream Protestant religion, the more the fundamentalists say, no, you can't do that. And a certain number of traditional Mormons go out the back door as this happens and find their way into fundamentalism. And over the years, these fundamentalist communities have fractured into various groups. And Warren Jeffs now leads the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is one of those groups. It is one of the bigger ones, mm-hmm. But by no means the only one. Although it seems to be more aggressively involved in the marriage of people under the age of 18 in these plural marriages. Most of the other groups draw a bright line themselves at age 18 and only involve adults in these relationships. And consequently, they have less problems with the law than the FLDS do.
And the FLDS also, which of course predates Warren Jeffs, but they have colonized an area around the border of Utah and Arizona where they're not going to be prosecuted for anything because they are the law. They're the police, they're the judges, they're the mayor, they're everything.
Well, yes and no. They're part of Washington. The community itself, it's actually Colorado City, Arizona, and Hilldale, Utah, sits right on the state line. Main Street is the state border. They are part of Mojave County, Arizona, and Washington County, Utah. So they're subject to the authorities of those two counties. But it was so remote through much of its history that people barely knew they were there, mm-hmm. much less reached them. The first prosecutions there were in 1935, a handful of people, a few more in the late 30s. There was a big major raid in 1944 all over several states and involved a few of their people. And then in 1953, the governor of Arizona initiated a huge raid where they basically arrested every adult in the community and took virtually every child in the community into custody and put them in the child welfare system. That ended up being politically fatal for the governor of Arizona. He lost his office partly because of it. And because the authorities got so burned over the outcome of that one, they pretty much left these people alone for a long time. Hmm. And the community grew to around 10,000 people, although they were not strictly located there. They were also spread out in the Rocky Mountain West and Canada and Mexico. So now there are, I think there may be 7,000 or 8,000 people there now. Warren, when he became president with the death of his father, Rulon Jeffs, he took over from his father in 2002, and Warren has initiated the establishment of a new community in a very remote part of West Texas, El Dorado, and they've built what they call a temple there. Many hundreds of people have relocated there. They bought a very large tract of land, and they're in the center of it, and they've managed to kind of create a buffer around them and the outside world. And I think the more true believers of Warren's followers have relocated to Texas. Hmm. He's also locating in a couple of other communities, but Texas seems to be the biggest mm-hmm. of those new sites.
Some of the stories about Warren Jeffs paint him almost as a cult leader. Do you think that's fair?
I do not. I know Warren. I have not seen Mr. Jeff since, I think December 2002 or 2003 was the last time I saw him. But I knew him over the years. He was the headmaster of a church school they had in Salt Lake City until he relocated to Colorado City with his dad in 1998. He's college educated. He's an accountant. He's a kind of a shy, tall, sort of pale, kind of geeky guy. And he always just struck me as sort of a nerdy, geeky kind of guy. The portrayal of him as sort of Svengali, who's hypnotizing all these people, I think is very much off the mark. I believe that he has a very devoted following because of the office he holds.
Prophet, they revere the leader as a prophet.
As Moses and Abraham, he is an Old Testament prophet, and God speaks through him, and he speaks to the people as the voice of God. That's what his community generally believes. Now, I don't believe that every person who lives in that community receives him that way. I think that's sort of the cultural rhetoric. I have a lot of friends in the community, and among my friends, I wouldn't say that they all receive him that way. But he does have a great deal of respect and influence in the community by virtue of the office that he holds.
Is there any check on his authority?
No, there really isn't. Other than the general check that, you know, a community only follows you as long as they're willing to follow you. And when you drive them off a cliff, you know, at some point you start losing them. And he has antagonized a lot of people in his community. There has been a kind of an exodus, and he's excommunicated a lot, thrown them out. And part of that process in them is your wives are taken away from you and reassigned to another husband, and your children are told they're not to speak of you as father anymore. And frankly, I've been a little surprised that that has happened with some of the families that I know, that they've actually gone along with that.
Go ahead.
I think part of the conflict there was Warren is sort of the new guard in the community. The old guard, the people that he excommunicated were mostly the old guard. They generally had a view that they needed to be engaged with the outside world. They weren't going to keep their young people and prosperity in the community unless people had jobs. That meant being involved with education and employers and reaching out to the outside world. There was always a view that this was not good, that you were somehow corrupted by this involvement with the outside world. And I think Warren has come to represent that viewpoint, and the people who were kicked out were the advocates of involvement with the outside world.
We're talking about religion and polygamy in America. In a moment, two women who've lived it and now have very different views on plural marriage. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about polygamy in America today and the fundamentalist sects that practice it. Our guest is Ken Driggs, an Atlanta defense attorney. He's written extensively about the legal history of polygamy. If you have questions, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also check out our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. And this is John. John's calling us from California.
Hello?
Hi, John. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks very much. Yeah, I was the whole subject piques my interest because both of my grandfathers were polygamous, and I have really mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for polygamy. My father's mother was the second wife.
And, I'm descended from a third wife.
Right, right. And I can see that polygamy, I think the only thing maybe worse than polygamy was making it illegal, because I think that the secrecy involved that was necessitated by telling little kids, you know, don't talk about our family anywhere, was really tough on them, and also engendered what became psychologically bad habits that when problems did emerge, maybe even unrelated to polygamy, that need discussion, that need to be brought out, there was a habit of playing it very close to the chest.
Mm-hmm. When you say don't talk about it, it's clear your grandfather was not in a community like the one we're talking about, but out in the regular world.
They were in Salt Lake City. And they both practiced polygamy at the time that the mainstream Mormon church still sanctioned it, though covertly. Actually, my dad's father married a fourth wife after the mainstream church no longer sanctioned it, and he was excommunicated for marrying his fourth wife, but that was probably around 1915. But all the others married their additional wives after 1890, but before about 1907 or 8, where it really became, somewhere in there it became verboten.
Mm-hmm. You talk about it leads to a certain degree of paranoia, doesn't it? Do you think, John?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Because if a 5-year-old goes to kindergarten and starts talking about, his aunts or mothers or whatever, whatever term, my aunt who lives next in the house next door with my other brothers and sisters, that could mean a visit from federal agents and father end up going to the penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps your guest knows more about the actual history of this than I, but I was, last time I was in Salt Lake, I'm out at a restaurant, and I see a photograph of leaders of the church in federal prison doing time for polygamy, and it's the same photograph I saw from a family history that included some of my relatives in the photograph. People took it pretty seriously.
Yeah, Ken Driggs, let me ask you, not so much about that, but are there polygamists who live, we've talked about this community on the Utah-Arizona border,
mm-hmm.
Are more people in places like Salt Lake City or just hidden?
I think there are more of them probably in urban areas. I have a lot of friends in the Salt Lake metro area. I know of pockets of them in Los Angeles and Las Vegas and as far east as Houston. Many times you would not know. They pass fairly effectively in the community. Kind of depends on the church, the branch of this that they're affiliated with, because their dress sometimes gives them away. But I do think criminal prosecutions backfire. You tend to make martyrs and heroes out of the defendants who are prosecuted. You don't discourage the conduct. You drive them underground. You tell them the police and law enforcement authorities are not your friends. They are your enemy. And when you have other legitimate issues like perhaps spouse abuse or child abuse or routine thefts, things like that, the community is discouraged from engaging themselves with law enforcement if they're afraid that it's going to out them and result in some sort of prosecution. So I think there are certainly other ways they should be going other than criminal prosecutions. I just don't think that works, and I think it has a big downside.
Well, joining us now is Ann Wild, who's co-founder of Principal Voice of Polygamy, a pro-polygamy advocacy group. She joins us today from the studios of KCPW in Salt Lake City in Utah. Very good of you to join us today.
Thank you.
And as I understand it, you're not part of the Warren Jeffs fundamentalist church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
No, absolutely not. And I'm glad that Ken was able to distinguish it. That is only one of many groups that are considered as an umbrella term of fundamentalist Mormons. I consider myself to be what's called an independent fundamentalist Mormon, which means I don't belong to any of the groups. Warren Jeffs is, like Kim mentioned, the largest. It probably has around 8,000 now. Then there's another one called the All Red Group, AUB, that has about 7,500. Then there's a couple of them that have 1,500, and then some that have 200 or 300. So there's a wide diversity of what the people that call themselves fundamentalist Mormons.
Mm-hmm. And as I understand, very few other than the Jeffs group would support people being married under the age of 18.
That's very true. We have encouraged, as Principal Voices, the leaders of the different groups to please, if at all possible, use their influence with their young people so that they will not marry until they're at least age of 18.
Why?
And most of them, I think, are realizing the importance of that, and they're complying with that.
Why?
And a lot of them have done it all along.
Excuse me. Why do you, as a woman, support polygamy? What's in it for you?
I can see all kinds of advantages, but mainly it is a strongly held religious belief. My husband and I wrote 65 books on gospel doctrines and history, and in our research and study, we realized that this was originally a Bible doctrine. It was restored by Joseph Smith when the LDS Church, mainstream church, was restored in 1830. It was one of the tenets that followed right after that, and even though the mainstream church has given it up, we feel like it's still an eternal principle, and I can see a lot of advantages of just looking at it from a common sense point of view. Say, for example, in my own case, I was not able to have any children after my first marriage, and I was able to enjoy the children of the other wives. And then, too, there are some women that maybe didn't have an opportunity to get a college degree or have a career, and so they got married in a plural family, but they want children. They can make arrangements with the other sister wives and have the best of both worlds. They can have a family, the children are well cared for at home, and they can still go get an education or get a job.
Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, does it not subjugate women to the rule of men?
Absolutely not at all. In my case, and in the cases that I know you're going to have some families, monogamous and polygamous, where the husband is going to be more controlling than he should be. But that is not inherent in polygamy, in my experience. So in my case, my husband was very open. I had all the free agency I wanted. I certainly did not feel subjugated at all.
Neil, let me jump in on that. I've had a lot of exposure to a lot of families in various communities. I know there's this stereotype out there that these plural wives are little barefoot, pregnant, victimized, beat down. That is not what I see. You're always going to see some people who are going to fit those stereotypes. I mean, that's just sort of the way human beings are. But I was a little surprised at how many very strong, sort of in-your-face kind of personalities I encountered. And that it was not uncommon that my reading of the personalities was that the wives were much stronger personalities than the husbands in some of these marriages. Hmm. So the stereotype just does not fit.
Let's see if we could get a caller on the line. And this is Allison. Allison's calling us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I've always heard that part of the problem with polygamy is welfare fraud, that the husbands are not really supporting the wives and the wives are considered single mothers and they go on welfare.
Mm-hmm. Ken Driggs, that's been an allegation, certainly in the Warren Jeffs case, since these marriages aren't registered, these are all single mothers, or at least according to the state, and they apply for welfare.
I have heard that allegation. I have not seen anybody convicted. I mean, I haven't seen any that it's been established. I'm not going to say that it's not a factor down in Colorado City. And I haven't seen anything anywhere that raised that flag with me with some of these other groups, at least the groups that I know.
Could I add to that?
Yes, go ahead, please, Ann Wild.
In December of 2000, three of us wrote a book called Voices in Harmony, Contemporary Women Celebrate Plural Marriage. As part of that book, we included a chapter printing the results of a questionnaire that we mailed out to several hundred women that are living plural marriage. We found in one of our questions was, had they ever been on welfare for longer than just a few months at a time? And, you know, sometimes things come up where that's understandable. There was a very low percentage of the women that responded to that questionnaire that had ever been on welfare. Really, in reality, this principle is all about providing for families, and a lot of times the plural wives will have jobs to help in that financial support.
Hmm. There is a tradition of sort of entrepreneurial efforts in fundamentalism that I've seen, and I've encountered a lot of women who ran their own businesses, had their own sort of income bases independent of their husbands. I don't know that that's necessarily majority, but it's certainly not an uncommon phenomenon in the fundamentalist world that I've seen.
Hmm. Ann Wild, before we let you go, I think a lot of people have probably seen the television show Big Love, and they wonder, doesn't jealousy get in the way?
Well, in a lot of families, I'm sure that's true. I was very blessed that I did not have that experience, and I guess the main reason for that is I was very assured of my husband's love. He was a wonderful, kind man, and this is not a principle for everybody. You have to have a certain disposition. You have to have a strong religious testimony. And I had a very happy plural marriage for 33 years. My husband died 5 years ago. So I did not experience that. But I have heard other plural wives say, yes, there is an element of jealousy. But if they have that religious foundation that they know this is something that they're supposed to do, they just work through it. And there's different ways of coping with that. And usually it's not a long-lasting situation. They get beyond that.
Hmm. Ann Wild, thanks so much for being with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Ann Wild, co-founder of Principal Voices of Polygamy. She joined us today from KCPW in Salt Lake City in Utah. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Dan. Dan with us from Denver, Colorado.
Yes, I'm just curious, what is the illegal principle behind it? Because in this day and age, couples can do whatever they want sexually, but any subsequent marriage would just be not a legal marriage. I don't understand what is illegal.
Now, I think consenting adults, but anyway, can you help us out, Ken Driggs?
Yes, well, I mean, if there is a crime that many states have called bigamy. Bigamy is a crime of fraud where people are not told about the other spouse and they go down and try to get a marriage license. There's a fraud element there. Basically, these are not volunteers coming into these relationships. That's against the law pretty much everywhere. Polygamy, as most of these people understand it, is not a fraud crime. Everybody knows what they're getting into. They have agreed to it, and they do not involve the state in it. When that involves adults, and I'm not talking about minors, but people 18 and over, there really isn't a crime there anymore. So right now that is not illegal, and that is one of the results of Lawrence versus Texas, a 2003 U.S. Supreme Court decision that pretty much opened up those kind of relationships to free will.
Hmm. Did that help you out, Dan?
Thank you, sir.
All right. Appreciate the phone call. We're talking with Ken Driggs, a defense attorney in Atlanta who's written a lot about the legal history of polygamy. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now is Rowena Erickson, co-founder of Tapestry Against Polygamy, a group that advocates against plural marriage. And she joins us from her home in Salt Lake City, Utah. And thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And you are a former polygamist. What prompted you to leave?
My own spiritual strivings and seekings. I was born and raised in a polygamist group here in Salt Lake. And my father-in-law was the founder of the group that I was a part of. And my mother believed in it wholeheartedly, so I was more or less conditioned to believe in it, which it all stemmed from Joseph Smith's teachings that if you have plural wives, you can become a god in eternity, and that's the ultimate goal that they want to attain.
Mm-hmm.
So thereby, the husband being capable of being a god, populating other worlds, and he needs all of these wives to assist him in populating them.
The way you describe it, it sounds like the wife is very much of a secondary role.
She is, but, you know, when you think about it, just everybody think out there, here's a man suddenly put into the role of he can have all of these wives now because he's going to be really cool on the other side. He's going to become a god. And I don't believe it's a natural element in a human being's life to be able to live with several women sexually,
mm-hmm.
and he himself maintain civility and also maintain a lifestyle that is conducive to the human nature. What I experienced from my point of view was I lived it because that's what I was thought I was supposed to do.
It seems to me if you were raised in this sort of atmosphere and spent your early life in it, once you left, it must have been difficult.
Oh, well, very difficult. And as I evolved in this and observed it, I never experienced love for my husband, a real love, a marital love, or I myself having ever loved a man because I was restricted from it. The belief system was you never fall in love, only when you get married, and then you can learn to love your husband. Well, that doesn't work. And then as you think about the unnaturalness about it, it causes people to do deviant things. And perversion comes in, sexual abuse, all sorts of disorders come in upon it. And as I tried to maintain some normalcy in this, raising 8 children, having all of them at home, natural childbirth, not being able to associate with the outside world, always lying, making up stories to people to justify who my husband was, and lying to the government to get food stamps, and living in poverty beyond what anybody should be required to do because I was sacrificing. And then as time went on, I thought, this isn't right. Suddenly, my own spirituality started to take precedence over my old belief system, questioning what I had been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And we are taught to never question the authority. And so it's just ripe for cultish behavior. It is a cult. I don't care what anybody says, it's a cult. So as I was...
Should it be outlawed, do you think?
Yes, it should. And in the group that I came from, there is a lot of incest, intermarrying, because they think they're a royal lineage, and perversion gets out of hand. It is just, they're crazy. I know of men, of fathers in the Colorado City group, their belief is that God had sex with Mary and conceived Jesus, so they can have sex with their daughters. And I had many friends from Colorado City who escaped and came to me for help. and later Tapestry came into existence to assist them, and they're still some of my best friends. And their healing triggered my healing, and I had to deal with a lot of crap coming out of there, the lies, the innuendos that I had been taught, the fear, how I had lied to my children, how they had grown up without a father, and they were dysfunctional. Most everybody is, but this is even beyond dysfunction.
Rowena Erickson, thanks very much for your time. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Rowena Erickson is co-founder of Tapestry Against Polygamy. She's been talking to us from her home in Salt Lake City in Utah. We'll be coming up talking more with Ken Driggs about the legal history of polygamy. We'll also be talking about the time-honored sports tradition of stealing signs. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's continue now our conversation about the practice of polygamy in America. Our guest is Ken Driggs. He's an Atlanta defense attorney who's written extensively about the legal history of polygamy. And Ken, I need to ask you, a lot of emailers have called us and written us to say, are there any groups that allow multiple husbands, a woman to have multiple husbands?
I am completely unaware of that. I've never encountered that.
And one other question, one difference between the main church, the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church, if you will, and these fundamentalist groups, one other difference, the Mormon Church many years ago allowed African-Americans in. Do the fundamentalist groups do that?
No, they do not. In 1978, prior to 1978, the LDS Church excluded African-Americans from holding the lay priesthood. There's not a paid clergy in Mormonism. In 1978, the church opened that up to all individuals, and it's resulted in a lot of black Mormons. I actually attend a congregation that's about 40% black. That has not happened in fundamentalist Mormon communities. They regard that as another indication of how the church has fallen away in an attempt to accommodate itself to the larger society. I do see an awful lot of Hispanic or Mexican Mormons or fundamentalist Mormons in some of the groups, but you never see any black fundamentalist Mormons.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Christopher. Christopher calling us from Mali, the country in Africa.
Hi. Yeah, I'm actually LDS myself, but living in a Muslim culture where polygamy is accepted, and I'm friends with lots of co-wives and men with multiple wives. I know there are immigrants in the United States, and this was brought up in New York, and some man lost a lot of family. They realized he had more than one wife there. How is that being embraced, or are they having to keep that a hidden fact for immigrants, which the Quran allows up to four wives, I know. Mm-hmm. I just wonder what the atmosphere is.
Kendrick?
Actually, there are some black Muslim polygamists in Atlanta, a couple of whom have come into some fairly prominent news stories. There is an incidence of that. These are American-born in Atlanta. There is an old anti-Mormon statute, I believe is still on the books, that says you may not immigrate into the United States if you are part of a polygamous family or if you're part of a religious community that teaches it. It was directed at Mormons, and I think it's still on the books. I suspect that they just sort of wink at that and allow many of these people to immigrate. I am aware of at least one polygamous wife from Canada who was deported by the United States because she had entered into a polygamous marriage, and Feds saw that as a violation of federal law.
Christopher, I wonder, the Mormon Church argues strongly against polygamy. How has your experience in Mali, has that changed your views on the subject?
Well, in my understanding, the way I look at it in the Mormon Church is that polygamy was so incommensurate with the culture that it was a detriment to the actual church, which we were trying to build. And so now I'm here, and polygamy is accepted, and I'm not sure quite how to look at it because some of those same abuses that happen in the States can happen here. And on the other hand, I see some cases where the co-wives are best friends, they help raise children together. It seems like a good situation, but it is interesting. Culturally, it's still hard for me to understand and to accept, but to see it in action is... I guess it does open my eyes a little bit.
Well, thanks very much for the call, Christopher. We appreciate it.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
It's It's my understanding that the present LDS Church's policy is if you are in a polygamous marriage in a country where it's legal and you wish to become a Mormon, you must become a monogamist before they allow you to join the church, which basically forces you to break up your family.
Hmm.
And that's very ironic considering the church's history.
And certainly its emphasis on family values as well. Anyway, let's get another caller in. This is Carol. Carol calling us from Salt Lake City.
Yes, hi.
I
just wanted to let you know that jealousy does sometimes affect the family, and that was my experience. I joined a polygamous family, not part of a group, and the first wife he had three wives. She came in as his third wife. She ran off the first two wives, and then when I joined the family, she divorced him, and ended the family that
mm-hmm.
way because of jealousy.
Jealousy.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder, Carol, have you seen the TV show Big Love?
Yes, I have.
It's one of the paid cable shows. Did your experience bear much relation to that?
Well, I haven't watched too many episodes, but the few that I did see, yes, actually, it really plays pretty close to real life. There, I think that a woman really can't help but feel those feelings. But like Anne Wilde said, and I know her personally, that they you have to overcome those feelings. You have to get beyond them and above them, and it can make you a better person.
It didn't work out in your case, though.
Well, I was willing to stick it out, but she actually had a civil marriage with him, and she divorced him and broke up the family.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in the learning curve. I was willing to stick it out, but it, like Anne Wilde said too, it's not for everyone. you really have to be willing to put other people's needs ahead of your own,
mm-hmm.
and that's hard to do as a person.
Ken Driggs, I guess I have to ask you the question about that TV show as well. You have had a lot of experience visiting in polygamous communities.
I think a lot of it's pretty close to the mark. I actually know some families that struck me as very similar to the main family in the community. The compound group, the sort of bad guys in the show, obviously are an attempt to portray the FLDS or possibly the Davis-Kenney Cooperative people. But I think the main family is very similar to some families I know and is fairly accurate. Let me mention one other thing on this jealousy thing. I think it makes a big difference if you were raised in a polygamous household, and this is the family you knew as opposed to if you're coming out of a monogamous tradition. A lot of plural wives were raised in plural homes, so it was something they knew, and they had some experience with dealing with those issues. So I think that's a big factor on how well you adjust.
Mm. Carol, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And Ken Driggs, you mentioned earlier the Texas Supreme Court case that outlawed sodomy.
Mm-hmm.
It was based on a gay couple, homosexual
mm-hmm.
males. And during the campaign in political campaigns in a number of states, constitutional amendments in some states to ban gay marriage, there's been a lot of arguments saying that, you know, look, if you allow this, the next thing you're going to allow is polygamy. Does this resonate throughout these communities?
I don't know that it resonates throughout the communities. There are a relatively small number of them that are sophisticated in the law, but I think that's true. And it was a United States Supreme Court decision,
mm-hmm.
Which means – and it was interpreting federal constitutional law, which means it applies to everybody. And while it was about prosecuting consenting sexual conduct, which is doesn't mean marriage or anything like that, but it also, I think, pulled the plug on the prosecution of consenting adults in polygamous relationships. It had nothing to do with marriages and authorizing a marriage. I think that's misinformation when people say that that's the result of it. But it allows these families to exist without being criminally prosecuted, at least for their marital relations.
Ken Driggs, thanks
so
much.
When you say marital, I mean as they see it.
As they see it. Ken Driggs, a defense attorney in Atlanta, who joined us today from the studios of WFSU in Tallahassee, Florida. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, we'll talk about stealing signs.